It's Kirsten O'Brien with you today till 2. And are you into gadgets? Do you like all the latest tech stuff? Or have you got a bit of technology causing you grief at the minute? Well, let's settle down now and chat to the gadget detective, Fevzi Turkulp, who knows its stuff when it comes to tech. Hi, Fevzi.
Afternoon.
Now, what we're going to start with, a tech story to do with the story of the moment, COVID.
Yeah, it's hard to get away from it, isn't it? But, you know, there was a lot of talk about the app, the track and trace app that we've been invited to download onto our phones. And the people who produce it, by the way, are saying that there have been 19 million downloads of it in England and Wales. So that's encouraging. It's not, you know, it's not as much as it could be, but it's not bad. What they've said now is that they've managed to improve the underlying technology where it matches how close you got to a person, how long you spent with them. And as a result of that, there will be more self-isolation alerts produced by the app. So we should expect that. Now, that's partly because there's going to be, unfortunately, more cases and therefore more likely we'll come into contact with people. But I would just say to people that the app is anonymous in that they can't use it to fine you. You know, for breaking quarantine or anything like that. And it really is useful for yourself and for your loved ones if you've got that, because it just gives you the heads up whether, you know, you have had a risky encounter with somebody, as it were, and you know, it gives you the chance to do the right thing to not only protect yourself, because then you'll be more aware if you start getting symptoms that you'll act, you know, appropriately and quickly, but also to protect the people that you love. So you know, if you haven't downloaded the app, I'd urge people to do so, frankly.
So how sort of close can it go? Because I'm thinking this half term we were at a theme park, and when we were going into the restaurant bit, we checked in there. Would it sort of alert me to people, the tables around me, or would in that instance, is it going by, I don't know, a two-hour window that you were there, and so that whole set of people, how specific is it getting?
It's a great question. So at the moment, the way it works is based on how much time you spend with a person who's later found to test positive and how close to them you were. So at the moment, you can spend up to 15 minutes between 0 and 2 meters of someone before you get an alert, or up to 30 minutes between 2 and 4 meters. Anything above 4 meters is not deemed to be contact. Now, they're going to tighten that now because they're a bit more confident of the underlying tech that says how far away you are, so they were a bit cautious about triggering it. So you can expect that algorithm to be tightened a bit, but that gives you an idea. So it's not if you walk past someone who later tests COVID positive that you'll get an alert. No, that's not it. You have to, it seems to be that, you know, it's how much of the virus you get exposed to, which is why, for example, NHS workers and so forth, is they talk about viral load, how much of it you come into contact with, that increases your chance of illness and more serious illness as well, it seems. But that's the way it works. So they're zoning it, how much time you spent and how close you were when you did it to that person.
And is there more finessing to be done, presumably, or have we got to the peak of what we can do with the app?
No, I think they'll always be improving this. Unfortunately, I think COVID's going to be with us for a long time, and the technology will continue to be, as you say, finessed, and the algorithm will get more sophisticated as well. The debate at the moment is that this app is built on a toolkit produced by Apple and Google, who worked together to produce the tools that the apps use, and it's built on privacy. So it's built on the fact that although people can get notifications, that the government doesn't know who you are and where you're going. Now, that's great from a privacy point of view, but from a health point of view, that's not ideal. But the problem is, if you then weaken the privacy, the worry is that fewer people will want to use the app because they'll feel that the state is spying on them. But frankly, now we're being told that, you know, literally thousands of people could be dying every day, much more than was dying at the peak earlier in the year, that I think people's view on privacy may change. It's not much good having privacy if you or your loved ones are seriously ill or worse. So, you know, sometimes these things we give them up, you know, for our good and for the greater good. The first thing is survival, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I got you. Okay, let's move on to gadget of the week then.
Yes, much more fun. This is a Nokia 8.3 5G mobile phone, which came out at the beginning, I think 8th of this month. It was available in this country. It's the new James Bond phone. Nokia have obviously spent a lot of money making it the new James Bond phone. So, you know, like you used to get the James Bond car, and you still do, you know, so if it was a, you know, BMW Z3 or whatever,
yes.
Now there's the James Bond phone, and there has been for a while. So in the upcoming film, No Time to Die, it is the new phone. Now, it's an upper mid-range smartphone, so the list price is just shy of £500, which is by no means cheap, but given that the top-end Apple phones now are selling for about £1,200, you know, you can see it sits somewhere between the two extremes. It has some really outstanding features. The screen is huge. I think 6.81 inches, if memory, yeah, 6.81 inches, which is great for watching, you know, films and YouTube videos and things like that on. It's got a great camera on it as well. They've used Carl Zeiss lenses and effects, and it's got a 64 megapixel camera, which basically means it will take pictures with huge resolution. So, and people think, well, why do I need that resolution? You know, it's more than I can even see. Well, the reason is you can zoom in on a part of it, crop it, and make that the picture and still have reasonable picture quality as well. So I like that. I like the fact that it's got a fingerprint sensor on it as well. I note that the new Apple iPhones use facial recognition, which doesn't work when people are wearing masks. So it's remarkable that they've managed to bring out a range of iPhones that don't have fingerprint sensors on them. The other thing to say about this is it's an Android phone. So you know that phones will typically use Apple's iOS software or Google's Android software. So most phones are Google Android. But most manufacturers of phones make their own version of Android, which is not a great thing because it means that you get fewer updates, you get less support. This uses what's called stock Android. It means it's Android unchanged by the people who make the Nokia phone. And what that means is that the device works more quickly, but also it means that you're guaranteed new versions of the operating system for 2 years and monthly security updates for 3 years. And that's one of the biggest failings with Android phones. So with Apple phones, you tend to get about 4 years, sometimes even more, of support before the phone becomes redundant. With some Android phones, you get nothing. With others, you get about a year. And that's really not good enough, particularly with regard to the security updates, because if there's a security flaw and it's not fixed, then you're vulnerable and effectively the device becomes unsafe to use. So the fact that they're using stock Android is actually a really good thing, and it makes the performance great. Battery life is good. You get about a day and a half of typical use out of it before you need to charge it up. It's quite quick, and again, unlike Apple phones, the memory in it is upgradable. So you can put a little micro memory card in it, about the size of a fingernail on your pinky, something like that. And that can expand it by up to 512 gigabytes, which is huge. So again, it's not like Apple kind of treat their phones a bit like cars, where when the ashtray's full, you buy a new one. It's ridiculous. You should be able to upgrade the memory in a phone, and you can do it with these ones. So overall, I've given it 4 stars. It's not perfect. It has a headphone port, which has become a feature these days because so many manufacturers doing away with the headphone port and forcing you to use wireless headphones. The downside that I didn't like is that it's only got one speaker on it. So when you are watching sort of movies and things, you're best to plug a pair of headphones in or use a pair of wireless headphones with it. But overall, I've given it 4 stars out of 5, and it's a great phone and worth considering, although there's a lot of competition around that price point.
Oh, it sounds great. Particularly, I've moaned to you before about the fingerprint thing going off the Apple phones and me spending hours for my phone trying to recognise me. So I'll give you an extra star just for that.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, my iPhone is, I try and use them as long as possible. Mine's just coming up to 4 years old now. And I was going to replace it this year, but now because it hasn't got a fingerprint sensor on it, I'm going to wait till next year, because I think they were thinking of putting it in but didn't quite work out the technology, because what other manufacturers have done, so when screens went edge to edge, there was no space for a fingerprint sensor, but other manufacturers have put it under the glass or on the side or on the back. Apple haven't done that, and I'm not quite sure why. Probably the design was laid down before COVID or something, but they should have changed that. That's a major flaw.
Okay, right. So we'll hear more about your second gadget of the week next. Kirsten O'Brien, I am chatting to the, well, he's the gadget detective on Twitter, Fevzi Turkalp. And we're going to move on to your second gadget of the week, Fevzi.
Okay, so this is not an exciting gadget, but it occurred to me that I use a whole range of different cables to connect up my phones and my tablets and computers and to chargers and the internet and everything else. And sometimes you don't get what you pay for. I noticed, you know, with some top brand cables, you know, that are very expensive or come with phones that cost over £1,000, they start to fray very early. Sometimes they seem to fade because of the heat makes the plastic shielding peel away, and it's not necessarily the cheap stuff that does it. So I just wanted to share that I've used many, but the ones that I've been using for about the last year are from a company called Anker. It's called Powerline Plus Mark II, like the Roman numeral II cable. So it's a range of cables that you can have USB-C, micro USB or lightning. So whatever you need for your individual connections at each end of the cable, you can have it. They have a choice of lengths, which is useful, which is 1 3 feet, 3 feet, 6 feet, or 10 feet. So the 1 foot ones, for example, are good for charging your phone on the go. So you could have like a battery pack, same size and shape as your set of your mobile phone, and just have them connected together and charging whilst you're actually using it. The 10 feet cable I use to charge stuff by my bedside and just bring it right up and close to it. So the different cable lengths are useful. Plus different colours, and I didn't think colours were very important, but these days you get chargers with more than one charging output, so they can charge several devices at once. But sometimes those sockets differ, so some of them may be capable of fast charging, and if you've got a particular phone that's compatible, it's important to know which cable is which without having to, you know, go back to the actual charging box and look. But by colour coding them, you could have like red for, you know, your Samsung phone, and then, you know, black for your tablet or silver or whatever it is. So that's quite useful. But the most important thing is I've been using these things, you know, in a quite heavy duty way for over a year now, and none of them have deteriorated at all. They look new. None of them have, you know, give me intermittent connections. None of them are showing signs of fraying or damage. And you can just see that they're well made. And it speaks not just the Anker brand, but it speaks to this sort of wider question: is how much should one pay for chargers and cables? You know, because if you go to, you know, Apple or Samsung, they can stiff you for up to £40 for a cable. It's ridiculous. But at the same time, it's not sensible to connect your, you know, £500 smartphone or whatever it is to a £2 or £3 cable. There's a middle ground. So these cables you can expect to pay between about £8 and £9 up to about £17, depending on the length of the cable and the connectors that you choose. And that's probably what you should be looking for paying. So the Anker brand is good. It's not the only good brand out there, but it's one that I've got good experiences with. So try and buy a brand that's, you know, known and also a reputable retailer. And be careful about, you know, sometimes there are places like, you know, Amazon, for example, which is a reputable retailer, but you get people selling through Amazon, which effectively they're called third-party resellers. Now, some of those are excellent, but it's worth buying from someone with a reputation to lose. So, you know, a well-known high street store or whatever, but you don't need to pay £30, £40, £50 for a cable. And the same applies to chargers. You know, you can get chargers for £1 on eBay, and you really shouldn't, you know. And similarly, you can spend, you know, upwards of £50 on the charger, and you shouldn't really have to do that either. So just try and look at it and look at the reviews and do your best to work it out. And if you need any advice, I'm on @gadgetdetective at Twitter. I'm happy to sort of help with specific questions.
Speaking of specific questions, just a quickie from Mike in Lower Early, who says, Fevzi, we had a power cut in Lower Early last weekend. Since then, for the past week, the speed frequently drops to really slow for seemingly no reason. I've turned my router off and on again. I'm on Sky Fibre, but I've got no idea what else I can do. Help, says Mike.
Okay, so this is very common following power outages. Internet it tends to become a bit variable or just generally slow. And there are things, you mentioned you've turned your router off and on again. That's the first thing to try. The next thing that you could try is doing what's called a hard reset of the router. Now, on most routers, so the router is a box that's about the size of a hardback book, and it's the first box that, you know, gathers the internet into your home and then disseminates it using wireless and wired means. Now, that normally has a recessed switch in the back, and with a little pen or a pin, you can do a hard reset of it. In some cases, it means setting up the router again. But you know, they can. Your internet service provider can talk you through that. Sometimes the fault is still with the internet service provider, and it will usually settle down by itself. For people who feel technically savvy, there is something called a DNS server, and you can reset that. So DNS server is something that allows the internet to understand what websites you want to go to, and your internet service provider will have one of those. It could have gone down. So before changing that, though, I'd speak to the internet service provider and ask them. And the final point is, you have a right to a certain quality and speed of service. And if you're not getting that, you have certain rights of refund for particular months and periods.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Lots of advice there. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Ofcom have brought in rules that automatically entitle you to compensation if the speeds are not what they're advertised at, even for a particular period of time, you know, because they make certain claims and we buy based on those claims. And, you know, it's not your fault that there was a power cut. It's nothing that you've done wrong. It's you've got a contract with your internet service provider, and therefore they need to provide you with that service. But I think a phone call to them is sometimes a good idea, just to see if they've got a feel for it. Sometimes, usually these things settle down by themselves, but sometimes you need to take action at your end. But your ISP can guide you on that as well.
Excellent advice, and hopefully, Mike, that will sort you out. Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much. Good to chat to you, Fevzi. And as he said, people can find you at the Gadget Detective on Twitter if you've got any queries. He's happy to help.